This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears and I'm joined as always by Bradley Chambers. Tonight we have three sponsors for the show, the first being EasyGrade, the second Jam Software, and finally XMA, as well as all our Patreon supporters. We'll tell you more about all of those as the show goes on. Bradley, how are you?
Fantastic. Getting back from a snow day. So, recording on Thursday, we were off Monday for Martin Luther King Day. Came back to school Tuesday, and then Wednesday there was a threat of snow, but we had some ice, so there's quite a few wrecks on the interstate, and not a lot of snow on the ground. What's funny is our parents love to make memes about our headmaster, about him not canceling school. And so they're quite funny, and they post them on his Facebook wall, and they're quite funny. This is our first time using RenWeb's parent alert system, and so it has built-in texting and phone calls. So we used that, I guess it was Tuesday night. It worked really, really well. So you literally can, from their app, parent alert app, send a text message to your entire school body, and you can also initiate a phone call. And so like you actually record the audio first, and then it just sends it, and works well as well. So you don't have to call someone, call like a number, record it, and then hang up. It's just all inside the app. It's an older app, hasn't been updated in a while, but it's still functional at this point. And so went to use it again last night because we were delayed an hour this morning and sent the text, nothing. Go to the recipients list, nothing. Maybe I didn't hit a button right. Like, because in RenWeb, you have to like hit the group and then you say, okay, like, is this go to custody, which just means like custodial parents? Does this go to correspondents only or like grandparents? And so there's these different groups. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe I left that off. Send it again. Nothing. So, okay. Get home. I was literally in the drive-thru getting the kids some milkshakes when I sent it the first two. Get home. All right, my Wi-Fi. Let's try it again. Nothing. So I call RenWeb and on hold for 11 minutes, the longest 11 minutes of my life, and they're having issues with it. It's like you'll see the hilarity of an alert system that goes down when there's winter weather across a lot of the U.S.
Yeah, scalability is key.
Yeah, and so I said, well, I've got three in the queue here. Are they going to go out? No, they won't. So I was like, when's it going to be up? We don't know, probably tomorrow. All right. So it's on the news. It's on, like, we email, we Facebook. I mean, it's on our website. It's everywhere. We obviously can't text or call right now. That's fine. So you get home and hanging out with my kids, phone vibrates. Well, it's one of the alerts. Well, I have three in the queue.
You just know where this is going.
Yeah, so you just know, like, 10 minutes later, another one comes. 10 minutes later, another one comes. It's like, oh, I feel so stupid. It's like we'd already emailed our parents and said, hey, sorry, like, the limited alert, our texting system is malfunctioning. And one parent goes, well, I just got three, so I think it's back up. So
the worst thing is like that makes you look stupid, you know.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, if it looks like that we don't know what we're doing, but it's like, I don't know, maybe not. Maybe most parents know that like we don't actually run that software, but we're just using it. It's just so frustrating when, like, because I would have said, if they said, yeah, they're going to go out, I would have said, hey, can you cancel two of those or something? Maybe they can't. I don't know. It's very frustrating. But the service overall, like, works. It's happy. We're happy with it. It's like, it's nice that it's like has an app. So, like, regardless of where I'm at, we make a change on schedule, I can send the text right away. So yeah, that was my fun night.
Yeah, well, I just did something similar to that today, which was the sports center where we go for PE. They phoned me at 2:30 today, saying that all the PE for tomorrow was cancelled. I was just like, what? So you know, frantically phoning around all the other sports facilities in the town, going, "Have they got any spare bookings for tomorrow?" So we managed to get some stuff sorted out, but you know, it's like, come on, you know, don't phone me at that time. They'd had a water main burst or something like that. There's a lot of construction going on there, so.
It's like you can't fault them for that, but it's still frustrating. Well, it's like,
yes and no, because I know that they knew about it on Wednesday night, and they didn't call me till Thursday afternoon. You know.
Yeah, that is okay. Yeah, that's Bush League.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, another thing happened to me fun last night. So I a long day yesterday, and I think most of our listeners may or may not know, but I also write for Tolls and Toys and a Sweet Setup, and so we have like a quarterly Skype call with you know the crew. It's Sean Blanc, Stephen Hackett, Jeff Gonzalez, or Jeff Abbott, Chris Gonzalez, and a new guy, Isaac Smith. So we had a call last night, and we do it like at 8 o'clock Central Time. So it's 9 o'clock Eastern. But it's like 10:20, and we're chatting about you know, this year and stuff like that. The next thing I know, my wife's waking me up at 11 o'clock. I fell asleep on a conference call.
I don't know. I think the worst you ever get is when you have the sense that somebody else is actually using the bathroom while on the conference call.
That is rough. That is definitely rough.
I'm not saying I've done that, but I've totally done that. I've got something I want to tell you about, which is iOS 9.3. I discovered a new feature, which we're going to talk about the implications of it today, but I just wanted to kind of mention this feature. I discovered that you are now going to get the ability to hide any application on the device through a configuration profile.
I actually have heard that as well.
Did you know that?
I briefly knew that through some rumblings on another place, Moonlight app.
I believe the only exception to that is the Settings app. Which in some situations might be the one you would want to hide. But I believe that applies both to built-in apps and third-party apps. So I have some ideas for how we might use that, and we'll talk about that later on in the show.
Well, yeah, it can be things that if you don't want students to like have access to the Notes app or...
Or email or something like that. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because you can already restrict them from adding email accounts. But like,
make the app go away.
Right, and so like just to simplify it, or like FaceTime or you know iBooks or something, if you just wanted that to go away. Because I think you can kill iBooks now, can you not? You can kill the store.
You can kill the store, and you can kill certain categories in the store as well. I don't think you can kill the whole thing.
So like you can kill on, before you can kill news and podcast. Mm-hmm. So there's a bug, like a 9.3, I assume it's 9.3, that when you try to flip this back on, they don't come back. So yeah, good times. I installed 9.3, and I love the blue light.
No, I haven't done it yet. I'm still too chicken. Well, you know, when you're iOS only, I'm sort of like, it's going to be really complicated now to try and sort of revert if something goes badly wrong. So I'm holding off. I'm currently trying to buy a couple of new iPads to practice device enrollment with. But just as I was about to start, I started enrolling our school in the device enrollment program. And realized I had to get my Apple customer number. So I phoned up the business team, and that store is shut for refurbishment. So I can't actually phone the building. The whole place is shut down. And I don't know where those people have gone. I don't know if they're working out of another store or whatever. But I've emailed them. They're not responding to email either. So it's not clear to me how long that store is going to be shut for either. So I might have to start up a relationship with another store just to get these iPads ordered.
And we are... Like I actually logged into my DEP profile the other day, and you know, one of the things that 9.3 mentions is it's kind of bringing VPP, I think, and DEP under kind of one umbrella, the best I can tell.
That's the Apple School Manager thing.
Yeah, and so when I log into DEP, it actually has an option to like enroll in VPP, but we already have it. Mm-hmm. So that was when I sent off my stuff to Apple asking for pricing and stuff. That was like one of my questions is like, what do I do here? Like, cause we had VPP before DEP was even a thing. Does it matter if they're not tied together, or is that going to migrate together at some point under Apple School Manager? I imagine it will.
Yeah. Even today though, there's a magic cutoff date where if you're enrolling in DEP, there's a date of something like the 24th of March, 2014, which if you had a VPP account after that, you can sort of automatically be slipstreamed into DEP. But otherwise you can't, and I'm pretty sure ours is older than that, but I don't know how you find out how old it is, so I'm a little confused about what to do next.
That's one benefit of me buying directly from Apple, as I can just say, figure it out.
Yeah.
It's a service from you guys. So anyway, so back to our deployment series, we're on part 4. And so before we get started with today's episodes, let's thank our first sponsor of the night. It's the great app, EasyGrade. So EasyGrade is a free iOS app that gives teachers the ability to quickly calculate grades on their students' tests and quizzes, like the old cardboard EasyGrader. Remember those growing up? Configuring it is super simple, lets you calculate grades based on the number of questions they get right or wrong. You can show grades rounded to whole numbers or to tenths. If you give partial credit, you can calculate grades based on half points, which is through an in-app purchase. So it's a free app, but if you want that feature, it is an in-app purchase. We have a number of teachers here that keep it on their phones, and it's great for just quick grading. They also have a new Mac version that was released. So if you want the same grade calculation on your Mac, you can do it there as well. And if you manage your school's app deployment, Mac version is through the Mac App Store, and there is educational pricing as well. So learn more about EasyGrade at EasyGradeApp.com. And again, it's in the iOS and the Mac App Store, so you can just search for EasyGrade. So it's a great app for if your spouse or your friend of yours is a teacher, it's a great app to gift as well. So EasyGradeApp.com. So today, as we've talked a lot about theory and planning in terms of like a high level standpoint of like what are your goals and leadership and things like that. So today is one of those episodes where we actually are going to talk about things that you must do and things you must buy.
Yep. I think that this sort of marks the transition into starting to plan actual work and execute that work as well.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about your network. And I don't think it's an understatement to say that your actual network is probably the most important piece of your deployment, because it doesn't matter if you have like a school full of iPad Pros. If you don't have a good network, it's just not going to matter.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's fascinating to me how completely useless a computer without network access feels nowadays. Mm-hmm. You know, having grown up in a world where we didn't have network access, and then we had very basic network access, to the point now where there's literally almost no point in picking up your computer unless you've got network access. iPad actually does a better job than some other platforms of being useful offline. I mean, obviously, I know Chromebook has an offline mode, but in terms of many of the features that you would want to use in Chrome OS, it's kind of important to be online. So network absolutely is one of the two things that I think that are fundamental to a deployment. The other one, I think, is app deployment and Apple ID strategy. That whole piece of how do you get stuff onto these devices and how do you make the user experience not terrible for people? That's the other thing that I would put on a par with this. And those two things can really sync your deployment.
So when it comes to your network, I think to me, this one statement will sum up the entire episode today. An unstable anything will undermine anything else you try to do.
Yeah, yep. And it will sap people's goodwill as well.
Well, and your teacher's perception of your network is extremely important, because if they don't trust it, when they come up with a good idea or see a good idea or get shared a good idea of something how to use technology in their classroom, if their mindset is, well, I doubt our Wi-Fi can handle that. Like, that's a problem, regardless of if it's true or not. And so the perception, I think, is as important as the reality.
Yeah. And I think the thing is that people are used to Wi-Fi not working. And I don't just mean in school, but just in life, Wi-Fi is known to be less reliable than other things. So it's typically the first thing that people will blame when there's a problem. It might not be your Wi-Fi. It might be, you know, DHCP exhaustion or something like that, but everybody calls it the Wi-Fi when there's a problem. So it's something to bear in mind, is that your Wi-Fi is not just the access points, but it's everything that goes from the internet to your device. And that's what people really are going to say when they mean the Wi-Fi. So if you think people come to you and they complain about the Wi-Fi and the problem actually is your Wi-Fi, that might not be correct.
I started to tell people, like, if we have issues, actually explain what it was. And they may not care, but, like, and we haven't had an internal network outage in years in terms of, like, everything was down. Most of the time it's been our ISP going down, and that's been, like, 2 times in 3 years. I mean, we've lost internet access due to loss of power in our building more than we have anything else in the past few years. And so, like, if our network goes down, and this last time our ISP went down for like an hour, well, people were like on their phones trying to email me, but their phones were still on the Wi-Fi because the Wi-Fi was still up. There's just no internet access. So I'd be sure, like, I'll send out, you know, we can page on our phones, our office phones. I'll send out a page like, hey guys, you know, our EPB is down, expected to be back up within the hour. If you need access on your phone, be sure to turn Wi-Fi off for the time being. And I'll explain actually those things, because if it's an ISP issue, you don't, I mean, again, not that it's a good thing, but I would want people to still trust my network internally.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to keep that faith, if you like. I was going to say illusion, but that's not the right word, because it is actually working. But I suppose part of the reason that people feel this way is because so much of what we do is in the cloud now, right? You know, you and I in our schools, and certainly other schools too. If I think about when our internet goes down and our Wi-Fi is still up, the only thing people can do is print. You know, there's nothing else. There's no other business function that we have in school that actually is hosted in the school network. Everything else is out in the cloud. So the internet going down and all of our internal systems going down are basically the same thing now. That's the world that we're starting to live in.
Well, and the benefit of that too is if people have LTE iPads, mm-hmm. or if they have smartphones, they can still access their core data.
It's one of the reasons I still buy a 4G iPad. Yep.
So it's almost like it's a fail-safe. I mean, a lot of firewalls have built-in LTE fail-safes into them, mm-hmm. like automatic switchover, and you can plug in like a USB air card. I don't know, like Aerohive's branch routers have the same thing. And so it's almost like everybody has their own built-in fail-safe. So I say all this to say this stuff matters for more than just how it actually works, but also just people's perception of how the sysadmin department does. And they need to think, like, our guys know what's going on. They support us. They're willing to, like, we can stress it and it's going to work. And again, this goes back to, like, making sure you have enough DHCP licenses available. Like, you know, is your scope big enough? You know, just take care and take pride in it.
Yep.
Make sure it works.
Yep. Yep. It's your digital playground. You know, you groom your playground, you make it look good, both for the kids coming in, but also for families to see the front of your school. This is like that for digital, you know, and it's something to take pride in. I think that's a really good way to put it, to take pride in your network rather than just have it be the sort of, you know, nasty thing that everybody hates, you know.
That's always, I mean, if your network's going down once a month, you need to, that's a problem.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you go to a school or education conference, you know, you can just stand up in front of a crowd and go, school networks, am I right? And everybody just goes, oh, and that's the kind of deal. So if you're able to do something that's good and robust and reliable, people will be absolutely delighted with it. You know, they really will.
Well, and technology has gotten better here. Wi-Fi in 2016 is much easier than it was in 2007.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Switches are easier today than they were in 2005. So everything has gotten, in some ways, simpler.
And much cheaper in many cases as well.
That's true. Because often, like, the neat, you know, like, what was a high-end product 5 years ago, maybe a mid-range product now, but, like, our needs may have not have changed that much.
Yeah, I don't get the sense over the past few years that our network needs have changed significantly. We went from 5 megabits to 50 to 150, and now that we're at 150 megabits for the whole school, that's more than 1 megabit per student, if not per user. And I don't feel like we're under pressure with that. I think there are some things we could do internally to improve the speed of networking to certain access points, things like that. But I don't think that bandwidth to the internet is our major problem anymore.
So bandwidth is kind of where I want to go next. So it's mm-hmm. interesting you bring that up. We have 400 by 400 at our office.
Yeah, I know you do.
Yeah, so and we can get it. We can get up to 10 gigs if we need it. It's obscene. It would be obscenely expensive. We can go to gig rather easily. But I don't think. I think if you can get to, for the average school, again, if you're a 40,000 person district, this is, you know, one thing. But like just for the average, like 1,000 kids school, if you can get above 100 megs, I think you're doing well. Like 100 megs symmetrical. I think it's like when you're at like the, I think you really struggle, in my opinion, if you're a school that's like rocking it with like 5 to 15 with like 600 kids. Like I think that's where you're going to struggle.
Yeah, because although you work it out on a per user basis, it's not, the way I observe network traffic from student devices is that it's extremely bursty. That, you know, there'll be a burst of traffic and then a lot of quiet time. And as long as you don't end up doing too many things that are simultaneous, it's not too bad. I had one situation a couple of weeks ago where I was trying to get kids to install an interactive textbook from the iBook store, and the book was like 1.4 gigs. I mean, first of all, what? But secondly, caching server was a help here, but it was still, it was still slow just because seven or eight people were all trying to pull that down through the one access point at the same time. And that did take a while to get done. But most things aren't like that. Even most app installations aren't that big. You know, that's actually bigger than almost any app that I know of on any iPad in the school. So it's just trying to avoid that simultaneous kind of thing. And this is where something like iTunes U can really help, because what you can do is you can actually say, you can put the link to that book in iTunes U and say, hey, for homework, go download this book and then bring it into school next class.
Yeah, that's a great idea, being creative with how, you know, when you download things. Because even on if you have a 10 gig pipe, the bottleneck is still going to be that access point. And so a 1.2 gigabyte book is still going to be a 1.2 gigabyte book. It's just going to take a while because iTunes can only serve it so fast. And if you haven't gotten one of them downloaded, it's not cached yet. So with bandwidth, I think you have three questions you need to ask yourself when you're looking at a deployment. Can you get more in terms of like, what do you have now and can you get more? Does your ISP even offer it? Are you on DSL? Are you too far from the remote to get more? Are you on cable? Is your upload really slow? I mean, if you're on 100 meg down and 5 meg up, can you get more? So that's the first question you must, I think, talk to your ISP about or shop other ISPs. And this is going to be largely a city-by-city thing. There is going to be no, you know, there's going to be, you know, I would argue get the most as you can pay for, but there's going to be no set amount that's going to be perfect for every school. Unless it, I mean, I guess 10 gig for the, you know, if it's free, it would be nice.
Yeah. It's definitely not free. You're right. And it's almost even street by street. You know, there are some streets in the town here where we can get a great service and other streets a couple of blocks away where we can't, just because there's not a fiber in that part of the street. So yeah, you've got to ask these questions. Even if you don't want them, you've got to know what the answer is going to be in the future.
Then how quickly can you get more? Like, is it something where your ISP has to like build something, you know, run new wires and it's going to take 6 months? This is why planning early is helpful. And then the last thing is, have you budgeted for more? And so let's say to get what you need, you think for deployment, it's going to cost you $250 or more a month. It doesn't sound like a lot, but if your school is like ours, you set your budget and it starts in August. And you may not have room in the budget for another $250 internet access upgrade. You know, next thing you want to think about, so we've got like kind of two parts of the network. You've got the bandwidth coming in, and then you've got the actual on-site network. And I think, assuming like you know you need a major overhaul, I think the first question you must ask yourself is, how are you going to pay for this? We have kind of taken the strategy over the past few years to start leasing the majority of our network here, mm-hmm. just because it pretty much continually is going to be refreshed every, you know, 4 to 5 years, if not sooner.
Yeah, so you're taking sort of 4 to 5 year period in that. I imagine that network hardware has got a longer shelf life than, say, iPads or even desktop computers in terms of the technology that's coming through. Certainly for your cabled stuff, right? The Wi-Fi is a slightly different situation.
I was about to add that, like your switches and your firewall are probably going to last longer than your Wi-Fi. But I think Wi-Fi is getting where it's not moving quite as fast because it's, you know, like a lot of things, it's maturing as a product.
Yeah.
So it's not going. And some of the enhancements an iPad deployment doesn't necessarily have to have. So like if you were, you know, going from a, you know, let's say you've had an 11G network years ago, going to an 11N, a modern 11N network, it's a big upgrade. Going to an 11AC network is a pretty decent jump, but going to like a Wave 2 deployment, I don't even think the iPads even support it yet. So it's like your updates or your upgrades are mattering less and less over time to the average school. So next thing, this is kind of a this is going to be a hot topic for a lot of schools, and I'm going to pretend to be no expert here. But it's security. Mm-hmm. My number one rule that I give everyone I talk to is don't overcomplicate security.
Yep. I couldn't agree with you more on that point. And that doesn't mean don't have it or go easy on it. But in all of these things, what you've got to do is you've always got to think about the user experience. Right. So what is that going to be like for a user? And you see some weird situations like, it seems to be universities that do this, and I don't know why, but you go on a university network and every time your device goes to sleep, it gets thrown off the network and you've got to log in again the next time it wakes up. And that's a user experience designed for a world in which, you know, you sit down, you open a laptop and you keep it open and working for hours and then you switch off. And that's a reasonable model in that situation, but that's just not the world we have anymore. And nowadays, you know, every time you lock your phone and put it in your pocket, you're going to have to reconnect to the Wi-Fi. Not happening. It's a user experience design problem. This is one of my strongest beliefs about network security, is that if you make it a terrible user experience, people will just work around it. And they'll work around it in very sophisticated ways that you will absolutely freak out when you find out what they've done. Because you're putting yourself actually at risk. You're putting the organization at risk by not giving people the tools they need to get their job done in the way that they need to get it done. And that's at the heart of many of the... In the UK, we have, you know, the Data Protection Act, and the Information Commissioner's Office published horror stories, quite frankly, about the things people have done with personal information. And it seems to me that at the heart of a lot of those stories, one of the problems is, one, the information wasn't electronic in the first place, or two, it was also electronic, but the computer security was such that nobody could get access to that information from the place and time that they needed to do that work. So you think about, you know, a busy social worker or somebody who has to take work home just to get through the caseload, but the IT department say, no, you can't access it remotely. There's no VPN, there's no nothing. So they're printing out that information and carrying it home in bags, which they then leave on the train, and all that information is getting lost. So that's the problem with network security.
One of the things you mentioned that when we think about this is like how different the connection disconnection device wake sleep is today versus it was 10 years ago. So before, even if you had a laptop, you would come in the morning, you'd set it down, you would open it up, and you would, even if you're in a classroom, you would largely have it open for an hour. Well, now it's a much more fluid thing. It's like you're working on a device, it goes to sleep. So it's just a little bit different. And iOS has gotten better about, I remember years ago, it would basically drop off the network when it went to sleep. The device would do it just to save battery. And obviously now it has a persistent Wi-Fi. I think that was maybe a feature of iOS 4.
Mm-hmm. I think so. Yep.
So second thing you just keep in mind is when you're developing your network logon procedure is don't assume the device will always have a web browser.
Yeah, because nowadays, of course, there are devices that don't. You know, you've got Apple TV is a classic one. That's been a problem very often in schools, particularly where you have to go through an HTML interstitial page in a browser before you can get to the internet. Setting up an Apple TV in that situation is basically impossible, or at least very, very difficult. No, I would say it's actually probably impossible in most cases, unless you can get an exception for your MAC address or something like that. So designing your network not to assume a web browser, I think, is really important.
Well, I was reading an article, I guess it was this morning, and talking about like IoT security, and it was talking about how most of the devices are terrible, but they don't have the processing power to have anything better.
Yeah, they are, you know, the plankton, the amoeba of computing devices. They just have enough to run their stack and no more.
Yeah, they're basically built to pour out information onto the internet. And this is, we obviously don't deal with this because we're a K-5 school, but like if you're a K-12 or a higher ed, don't assume your kids won't poke on the network. And so I know we were saying a few minutes ago, don't overcomplicate it, but don't make it so wide open that kids can just, go willy-nilly.
Yeah, you're definitely going to get a certain percentage who will do that for fun and games, for sure.
So you had a good note here. The Google Beyond Corp. Do you want to run through that story?
Yeah, so the heading I put down for this was don't defend the perimeter. And really and truly, this comes from experience in working in schools where the network design has been basically, let's ensure that we only ever connect authorized computers to the network. And on that assumption, we know that once a computer's on the network, it is legit and it can get access to lots of different things. Which is, at one time, in a wired networking era, that's really a pre-Wi-Fi network model, I would say. But this was an idea that, Bradley, you put into my head when we started this show. You were talking about applying security at the application layer rather than lower down. And it was just about a year ago, I think, that I saw an initiative coming from Google where they were talking about a thing that they were calling Beyond Corp. Now, I think Corp was like Google's name for their corporate network. And they were doing this initiative called Beyond Corp, where instead of defending their network and making it so that if you're in this corporate network, then you get access to the corporate stuff, they were moving the layer of security up to the applications. And they were basically doing the Bradley Chambers playbook, right? And I think this is really an important idea because as we move to the cloud, you've got to put your security in the cloud. So we have the zero trust networking model now, which means that being on the Cedar School network confers you basically no privileges in terms of getting access to our Google Docs, our Google Drive situation, our email system, things like that. That is as accessible from any other network as it is from our school network. And what that does is, one, it means our school network has to be, doesn't have to be less secure, but it can be a little more relaxed about security because there's nothing to steal if you get in there. The worst you can do is you can print out a picture of Lionel Richie off the printer, which is what somebody did once. But what we do, and we do take very good care of, is defending the data in the place where it is, which is on Google Drive. So we have, you know, two-factor authentication for all, well, certainly for all the teacher users, and we have restrictions on who can share what with whom, and things that can be shared outside the domain and things like that. So I take very good care of those security settings because that's where the data lives. Whereas defending our Wi-Fi network against all possible intruders is, I do it, but I do it mostly for bandwidth preservation rather than for defending some asset or something that's inside the building.
Yeah, so to kind of wrap up the security subsection, I think the key is balance. You're not a Fortune 500 if you're a school.
Yeah.
But you also don't need to run it like you would your cabin out in the woods where there's nobody within 300 miles. Find balance and run it like if you were the end user, how you would want it to work in a way, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And it goes back to that ethics point that we were making, was it last week or the week before, where it's like the sysadmin should take the same constraints as the users. You know, so if the users have to log in every 5 minutes, you should have to log in every 5 minutes and see how long you can stand it. And that's how your kids are feeling at the same time.
So before we move on, let's thank our next sponsor of the night. It is the fine folks at XMA. So XMA is an Apple solution expert, and they are positioned perfectly to support your institution with the deployment of iPad and Mac. They have built upon their 30 years of experience to create the unique All Learn program for iPad. With All Learn for iPad, XMA can help you with the planning, financing, and managing your iPad deployment. XMA can also use their accredited trainers to deliver Apple professional development to teachers and staff to ensure you get the best results from your Apple products. So to learn more about XMA and the All Learn program for iPad, go to their website, xma.co.uk, or follow them on Twitter at @wearexma. Thanks to XMA for sponsoring Out of School this week. So kind of moving in inside the network, we talked about security, talked about bandwidth. Let's talk about firewall. Not going to be a long section here. I think two things you got to be careful of is, are you running something that's end of life? Because it can happen sooner than you think, depending on like when in the product life cycle you bought something and how long you've been running it. So if you bought something, it was already like say 2 years old, and then you've been running it for six, it's possible your vendor doesn't even like support it anymore.
Yeah. And your chances of getting even relevant information about it, you know, it could be difficult to even find out whether or not this new thing you've got will work with the old thing you've got, because the new thing wasn't even thought of when all the materials were written for the technology you've got in place right now.
So if this is not your forte, and it's not mine, I know enough here to be dangerous. I'm not going to, you know, jump in there and always tinker with ours and get it working and I'll leave it alone. Engage your local channel partners, like your resellers. Talk about where you want to be in 3 to 4 years and look at their product portfolio and help. And they can come alongside you, make recommendations. Now, so we bought our last one. We have a SonicWall NSA 4600, I think. And what we did is we bundled in like, I think, 5 years worth of content filtering in the initial purchase, because it's like way cheaper if you buy it up front. Mm-hmm. And so I think it ended up being like $500 per year versus like, I think, $1,200 if we paid just by year. And so that's one thing. If you can do that, you can say, okay, you almost turn it into like a single purchase because you think, okay, if we're buying 5 years worth of content filtering, it'll probably be time to replace this after 5 years. And definitely, you know, that I love running content filtering on a firewall because it's like your last place out and your first place in. But definitely, you want to keep the firmware up to date, and you just want to buy a decent one. You don't want to go cheap here.
Yeah, no, and that's another potential bottleneck for your system if you don't scale it up correctly as well.
So moving on, again, I promise that wouldn't be a long section. Switches. So I'm gonna say this, and I'm gonna repeat it twice. I'll repeat it once. For the majority of schools, you do not need 10 gig switches. For the majority of schools, you do not need 10 gig switches. I'm not saying they're not nice and they're not helpful and they're not better. You do not have to have them to run a one-to-one deployment. I promise you, you don't.
Yeah, I think with things like 10 gig switches and many other situations along the way, one of the things to bear in mind is that resellers, when they sell a school a bunch of iPads, they're making very little margin on those devices themselves. So I don't want to throw shade here, but sometimes you might get people trying to talk you into specking up other parts of the deployment so that they can make more margin in those things to justify their involvement in the whole project. Whereas if you're a bit more aware of what you need, then you can say, okay, you need to justify why you're telling me 10 gig switch. But that is something that can happen from time to time.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible some schools might need them, but you need to be proven why you need them. Like, don't assume that you need 10 gig switches. I don't even know if I was building a new school today if I would put in 10 gig switches.
No, I agree. Yep.
Because, like, by the time I felt like I needed them, I'm sure they would be old. Your Wi-Fi is going to be your bottleneck on a modern one-to-one deployment because you're probably anything you do, Chromebook, iPad, anything other, the Surface, whatever device you do, majority of your users are going to be on Wi-Fi, and the Wi-Fi is your bottleneck. Even if you have like 802.11 Wave 2, 802.11 AC Wave 2, and you have like some mythical iPad in the future that has Wave 2 on it, Wi-Fi is still the slowest part of your network.
And it will be for a while. And then probably the next slowest part of your network is your connection to the internet as well. You know,
right,
unless you're running
exactly
a 10 gig connection to the internet. The pressure and the direction of travel is going to be services out on the internet rather than services on premise. So your Wi-Fi, then your bandwidth to the internet. What's the point in overspecking a bit in the middle there when it's going to be slow getting into the switch and it's slow getting out the switch? Why spend that money?
Yeah, I mean, again, if you got the money to blow, eh, knock yourself out, sure thing. But you know, be mindful. So I will say, don't run a one deployment on 100 meg switches. I think you and I had somebody talking to us last week. They were volunteering with their kids' school, and that was like one of the things. They had switches from like 2002. You do need to have like modern gigabit switches. I mean, and they don't have to be super expensive. HP makes some like great Pro Curves. Mm-hmm. I think like $300 to $400 on Amazon, lifetime warranty. Those are great switches. They support VLANs. They support a lot of bells and whistles. And so you don't. There is a mid-game between buying $75 switches from Office Depot and $5,000 switches.
There definitely is. And I mean, would you, Bradley, use like a small unmanaged switch just to extend stuff at the end of range, or would you avoid that?
I mean, ideally, you would avoid it, mm-hmm. but we have it.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. There is what's ideal, and then there's what is reality. I mean, it's like, ideally, my switch closets would be perfectly labeled, but I also inherited a building that was 87 years old that no one had taken care of that kind of stuff, so it is what it is. And like, for example, we've got a printer, like one of our MFP printers, that is in a weird spot. It's hard to rewire, and someone else's office is near there. There's like a little $30 gigabit switch that's running off of it. It is what it is. It's not perfect. It's not ideal. Sometimes they turn off the surge protector that's plugged into and tell me the internet's down, when in reality, the power's just out.
I have one area of the building that's like that as well. Is the teacher in there likes to turn off everything when she leaves the room. But the problem is that the switch that serves that entire floor is in her room. So she I've tried labeling it. Didn't quite work. I'm thinking, you know, is it possible to build like a metal box over these switches in the wall just so that with a padlock on it? I don't know.
We have like in our the church's TV like production room is where the fiber rack is that runs the Fire Family Life Center, the Brainerd Crossroads facility. And the TV guys, they flip a lot of the breakers when they're not in there. Like, they should make sure all the cameras, like, they basically cut power to the cameras and a lot of the those expensive switchers because they don't need power during the week. And so if there's a power surge, they just want that stuff to be off. Occasionally, they have flipped the breaker that controls the fiber rack. And so, like, you can always know when it happens. Like, it happened 3 weeks ago. I got a text from the guy that manages that facility. It's like, hey, all my cameras are offline. Like, CCTV cameras. As I log into the Wi-Fi, all those access points are offline, plus the one that's in the TV production room. So it's like I drive over there at 11 o'clock at night. Our building is terrifying at night. Terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. Yes. And they had cut the switch. So it's just, yeah. I mean, it's again, there's what you would build if you were building a brand new school. But I'm sure a lot of schools are like ours. Like, you inherited stuff. It's old buildings. It's hard to rewire. And you just make it work.
Yep.
Cat 5E, I would say, is your minimum for any new wiring you're going to do. Or if you've got important wiring, like, don't try to be running. I would at least get Cat 5E. If you're doing anything new, Cat 6 is what I recommend. If on your switch closets, if you can connect them with fiber, like, that's awesome. But if not, like, cats, you know, try to do it with Cat 6. Like, when I came here, we had, like, actual Cat 5 cabling connecting them. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to do fiber, but it was just really expensive. So we've got Cat 6 connecting them. And, you know, it works okay. If you're going to, like, have a bunch of clients, like, I would say, like, 300-plus clients on the network at any given time, look at VLANing your network up. So, like, you know, have your students doing one thing or your staff doing one thing and your guests doing one thing. You're just going to kind of limit your bonjour. What's the word I'm looking for?
Broadcast traffic.
Yeah, broadcast traffic. Yeah, you're just limiting your broadcast traffic. So, again, if you're, you know, 300 or under clients at any given time, you're probably fine with just a single subnet or single VLAN. So, but if you're more than that, that's something I would definitely consider. And, like, most Wi-Fi systems are going to have great support for VLANs as well.
Yeah, and you would do VLAN assignment based on the user's role rather than the area of the building?
I would. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I would do because, like, I would assign, like, see, I would do it through, like, our Aerohive, and I would, like, you know, you would run your guests under one thing and your staff under another and your students under another. Mm-hmm. But so, like, I don't really care where they're at. I care about the device.
Yeah, another reason for doing that, if you're in a very compact building like we are, is that I was initially thinking in our first design of putting VLANs on each floor, but one of the people suggested to me that that's a bad idea because as you kind of walk down the building, you can end up sort of tunneling back through different VLANs, you know, and there's a possibility of traffic, you know, slowing down as you, you know, because you might stay associated with a radio on the top floor when you're on the middle floor and so on. So it was described to me as being quite problematic to do that if you're in a stacked building rather than a single story building. So we would do that the same way as well.
Before we move on to our last few sections, let's thank our final sponsor of the night. It's Jamf Software. You guys know Jamf. They provide IT staff with great tools that power Apple technologies in schools and workplaces. It includes Macs, iPads, iPhones, and Apple TVs. They have a cool app for the iPad called Casper Focus that allows teachers to kind of manage their classroom deployment from their own iPad. Allows teachers to gain students' attention, conduct secure exams within an app, select a specific Apple TV, choose and distribute iBooks, and initiate AirPlay right from within Casper Focus. So if you want to learn more about the Casper Suite, Casper's Focus, and Jamf Software, go to jampsoftware.com and check it out. Fraser and I both run it and absolutely love it. And so again, thanks to Jamf for sponsoring Out of School this week. So, last few things, and really probably I would say maybe the most important and the area that most schools probably do poorly at is Wi-Fi. So there is no Ethernet on the iPad Pro. So it's a Wi-Fi only device, not the iPad Pro, all iPads.
Oh,
you know, and again, pretty much anything you're deploying in the classroom now is going to be Wi-Fi based because you don't run like Ethernet to the student's desk. Can I imagine? That'd be an expensive deployment.
Yeah,
power and tricky. Ethernet.
I mean, that's your school lab. It was Ethernet to the desk. I was actually just in this classroom today. What is now our art classroom used to be our computing lab, and they have boxes built into the floor where there's power and Ethernet in there, and those get used now for the kids to plug in glue guns so they can use a glue gun at their desk, which is hilarious, I think. But those network ports are not even active anymore. They're not connected at the switch. So they will never be used again, I'm sure of it.
So I would say that an 802.11n Wi-Fi setup should not be deployed today. But a well-designed 802.11n network can be used today with a 1-to-1 deployment. I just would not recommend you buy 11n gear today.
Yeah, there's no point in going, you know, starting off today with the last generation technology. If you are refreshing or building a new network, it just doesn't make financial or, you know, logistical sense to start behind.
But I don't think you've got to do 802.11 AC Wave 2. I mean, a lot of vendors are selling those access points. I don't think you have to do that yet. If you've got the budget, it doesn't hurt because you'll be prepared for the future. But you don't have to. So again, just to recap, I would not deploy 11N today, but you don't have to uproot this is the key part, a well-designed 11N network. I would take a well-designed 11N network over a poorly designed 11AC network.
Absolutely.
One of the big things that trips up people on Wi-Fi today is they plan for coverage only. And while you do have to plan for coverage, and we'll discuss more about that in just a second, but I think it's more important to plan for capacity and understanding what's the population of users in this area going to be. How do we cover that? Because it's not just about getting them three bars on their iPad or their Chromebook. It's about having them being able to talk to the radio.
And also being aware that whenever if you plan very finely for capacity, you may have to do that every year. Because as classrooms change and classes move about, and maybe if you have composite classes, they'll group and regroup and ungroup. And more, in a secondary school, you may have that even worse on a daily basis. You have to just be careful not to do that in such a fine way and so precisely that you end up having to do it all the time.
I think it's worth, in your planning stages, having discussions about where you need Wi-Fi. Because, like in our homes, we just assume it's everywhere in our homes because it's like there are generally one or two access points and it covers the home. Mm-hmm. But in your schools, especially large schools, you don't need it everywhere. You don't need it in every bathroom.
No. But you also have to think about, and again, this is the same thing as I just said, I suppose, plan for the possibility of change. So we had a situation where we had a school office, which was kind of in the door and off to the left. And then what we did is we took the receptionist out of that room and put her kind of in the hallway. So now there's a reception desk just as you walk in. But the problem was that all around this hallway were classrooms, and all the classrooms had the access points in the rooms because that was where most of the computers were. So she was just kind of just outside the range, because our graded floors get very thick stone walls. She was sort of just outside the range of every access point where we had moved our desk to. But we had built the desk and we physically built it into the wall. So we couldn't move the desk. And so we ended up actually just running an Ethernet cable under the floor to her, because it was mainly just about her desktop Mac that she was using there.
Now, one thing to consider too is like outdoor options. If you've got common areas, have outdoor classrooms, if you've got like outdoor cafeteria seating, think about that stuff. They, you know, most of your vendors will sell outdoor access points, but so those are more expensive. So again, go back to your discussion about like where do you need it, not where, you know, the answer is not everywhere, because that's just in some ways fiscally irresponsible. But where do you need it? I mean, it's, you know, same thing as like, if you don't need HVAC, you know, if you don't, like you're saying, okay, somebody said, hey, where do you want to have this room, everything in this room heat and cooled for this day at school? Well, heat and cool every room. But if you have the system to just heat and cool the rooms you're in, you do that because it's more fiscally responsible to make good use of your resources. So if you don't need outdoor access points, don't assume you do. Like, you don't have to run Wi-Fi to your football stadium. Most people have LTE phones or 4G phones. Mm-hmm. So, but you might need it. So those will vary on a school-by-school basis.
Yeah, and you can think about other strategies as well, such as, you know, if you have, you know, PE staff working out in the sports fields, maybe the easier thing to do is just to buy the sports staff an LTE iPad and give them access out there rather than cabling up your entire playing fields with, you know, the best Wi-Fi that you can get. So it just depends on what you're doing and who's doing it and how often you're doing it and things like that. Because if the range of staff that use that facility changes a lot, then you don't want to have to buy half your staff an LTE iPad just in case they go onto the sports field. But if it's a very defined space that, you know, this belongs to the sports teams and it's the sports coaches that go there, maybe the easier solution there is just to get them 4G iPads.
Next thing to think about with Wi-Fi is 5 gigahertz versus 2.4. Every iPad is 5 gigahertz. Most devices you're going to buy today that are actual computing devices are 5 gigahertz. The only thing you're really seeing now that's 2.4 only are really cheap laptops and a lot of Internet of Things devices because it takes less battery to do 2.4. I would say you can turn off 2.4 on a lot of your radios, and this will limit co-channel interference because there are only three channels and 2.4 that don't overlap, so 1, 6, and 11. So if you've got five access points that can all see each other and they're broadcasting 2.4, you're going to have interference on that channel. But on 5 gigahertz, depending on what country you're in and how close you are to airports, you would have anywhere from 19 to 23. So 5 gigahertz, you have a lot more options there. And again, most devices support it. Now, one of the differences between 2.4 and 5 is that 2.4 travels through walls much easier. 5 gigahertz, kind of its distance is not as long, but again, it's a much cleaner band. So I've seen schools, like if they say, you know, every other access point, they'll just turn off 2.4 just to help limit it. So you can play with that to help limit it. And this is, again, if you don't know what you're doing, you want to have someone come in and help you design this thing and lay it out right so it'll work and verify that it works. But that is a valid option today. It's just actually just disabling 2.4. And overall, make it easy to connect to and make it fast. Give students great access. Like, if technology is important enough that you're rolling out Wi-Fi and handing them out these expensive devices, why not give them a great experience too?
It's something that, you know, if you bring in these devices, one of the things that people sort of expect is that they're going to get access to network resources. And that's one of the reasons for doing it, is because that access to network resources has become such an important part of our society and the way we work and the way that we share information and so on. And if you think about something like iTunes U, you know, if you're going to adopt iTunes U in your school, you need that network part is not just a nice to have addition. Your learning management system doesn't work unless you've got that access. And iTunes U is certainly not the only one that's in that situation. But you've got no option to host iTunes U internally. You can't do that. It's not even offered. So it's important to realize how business critical this is becoming. I mean, in 2016, I can't believe we're even seeing is becoming. You know, has been for the past 5 years is probably more correct. But of course, if your school is just coming to, ubiquitous computing or one-to-one now, it may not have been that way before, but I think there is a problem now because some schools have been so far behind for so long that the things that many networked organizations take for granted, schools are still just coming new to questions like this when everybody else has solved them, you know, 5 years ago or more.
This is the kind of place in your deployment where you really want to think through where you're going and make the right decisions here, because this is a hard place to recover from failure.
Yeah, it is. And it's, in some ways, it's more important than the device, because the network will live on far beyond any particular device. I mean, we're running the same network now as we ran with iPad 1, you know, and we're about to be on iPad Air 2 or whatever, with basically the same network. The network design is stable and reliable and works, and there's no compelling need to change it. Although there are some things I would like, of course. But, you know, the device comes and goes, but the network lives on. And I think if you have fundamental problems with your network, those are going to just be pain forever. iPads get faster, apps eventually get deployed, but network rubbish stays on forever unless you fix those fundamental problems in your designs.
Network rubbish, that's a good term.
Network rubbish, I was trying to think what a better word was, but that is about the right word. It's network rubbish, yep.
So last few things, sell your networks. Like, what do you do there? You know, one thing this is kind of coming to full circle now is with smartphones, most of them are doing Wi-Fi calling now. So you'll have some calls on the network as well. And then depending on your setup, like your staff, you may give, as we mentioned, certain parts of your staff may have LTE devices.
Yep. And what are you going to do about that? I mean, is there some way in which you can... You know, could you use a feature like you know, the global proxy on iOS to get that traffic back through your network if you're concerned about security and filtering. That's something to think about as well.
And last thing is, this is kind of really come upon since our last discussion about this years ago, is Bluetooth beacons. Mm-hmm. And these are a thing now. And you know, how can this impact your deployment? What can you do with it? How does it help you automate things?
Yeah, I think in the first case, as with almost any new technology in education, the first thing that MD does with it is turn it into a treasure hunt for kids. So one of the ways that people have been using beacons is to, you know, you've got to go around the school, and when your iPad sees a beacon, something happens and you've got to collect these things. But more and more and more, what you're seeing is beacons can be used, the presence of a beacon can be used to trigger some useful admin function. So we talked briefly about this in the last series, I think, but the company Estimote seem to make quite an easy-to-use, easy-to-manage set of beacons. And they have ways of, the beacons have as a very low-power, very basic Bluetooth radio. But they have a platform where you can actually sort of walk around the school and deploy new settings to these things. So they seem to be quite good. I haven't really used them myself, but I've seen them and I've been in situations where they've been used very well. But one of the things that, for example, the Casper Suite can do is it can use the presence of a beacon to trigger some kind of MDM action. And this is where we're going to tie up two parts of the show, is that when we're talking about app hiding in iOS 9.3, one of the things that schools have always wanted to do is be able to disable certain apps when the iPads come into the school and re-enable them when the iPads go away. And one of the ways in which you could potentially do that, I'm not ready to say this is absolutely possible right now because all of this stuff is still a bit kind of under development, but in principle, let's say, you could scope a configuration profile that says block every app except iTunes U. Okay, it's an extreme example, but go with me. Everything except iTunes U and Safari, let's say, gets blocked when you see this kind of beacon. And that could be a school beacon, and you put that into the classrooms, and whenever kids go into the classroom, their iPad gets pushed a profile that makes most of their apps disappear. The apps are still installed, of course, but they're just hidden. Therefore, they're inaccessible. And that's something that I'm maybe interested in some of that stuff. I can think of certain use cases for some of that stuff, so might have a look at that.
Gosh,
in the future.
I would never thought this stuff would be possible years ago.
Well, it's how far we've come, you know, and I think that the thing I love about iOS, certainly far more than Android and even a bit more than Chrome, is that you have so many hooks now into the operating system to really tailor the experience in a great way. And that can be used for good or for evil. And as always, with great power comes great responsibility. And I think it's on us as systems administrators not to ruin it for the kids. You know, and I say that in the most broadest sense possible. Don't mess it up for them, right? Make it a good experience. Make it something they want to buy into. And one of the things that has caused deployments to fail is because the kids just didn't care about their iPads because they were only there to, you know, do maths on, right? That must be like the worst of all possible experiences, is I got this really nice iPad from school and all it can do is show me a Pearson textbook. You know, that'd be pretty miserable.
Well, I get asked this before. Run it like you would want to use it. Like, if you were a student, how would you want to use it? And don't assume that all your kids are, like hoodlums or what's the word?
Video game addicts.
Yeah, they're there to like cause a ruckus. I mean, just do you trust them?
Yep, and if you can, you get a majority culture of positive use of the device. That's the golden ticket. That's the most important thing, and I think. The more you get a chance for people to show, you know, modeling good use, that's fine. I mean, we have, you know, example is, you know, the use of Spotify in school. Now, it's in no way banned in our school, and kids who have got the right to install their own apps can install Spotify. But we have developed what I think is quite a good culture of you're only allowed to use it when the teacher says it's okay to listen to music in the classroom. And the class that often gets to do it are the kids who are doing, like, you know, advanced art classes where they're sort of focused by themselves on work at one time and they like to listen to music while they do that. It helps them sort of concentrate and block out distractions and so on. As a teacher, I personally don't like kids listening to music in my classroom, but that's just me. I don't have a good reason for that. It's just me.
Well, to me, it would depend on like the activity. If it was like a creative thinking, or you know, if you're just, you know, studying and reading, and it, to me, it's going to depend on the kid. Like, some kids can study and listen to music at the same time. Mm-hmm. Some can't. And yeah, and I think that's a perfect example of like how kind of how I think sysadmins who are kind of open-minded, because I are thinking now, because I remember like at my last job, you know, I remember when I started there like 2005, it was like no streaming music. Because they were concerned, this is, you know, again, you had a 5 meg connection. If everybody was listening to Pandora or whatever, it would, you know, sync up the bandwidth. But like, I mean, it's not going to kill your network. Again, every kid streaming Netflix in 1080p, certainly. But listening to music is not going to, if the worst thing your kids do, listen to Spotify, you're in good shape.
Yeah, we're doing okay.
Yeah, you're in good shape.
And that's where also, Bradley, your Wi-Fi can help you with that as well, because if you have analytics on the Wi-Fi, you can start to look at that and say, okay, well, look how much Spotify traffic is happening. Is that becoming a problem? Is it just one or two users that are causing me a problem? It's very helpful to be able to allocate your traffic to individual users so you can go and see, okay, what's going on here? Let's have a conversation about it.
Yeah, you're just being aware of what's going on, because you may not realize you have problems that you do, and vice versa.
And the problems you imagine that you will have, you probably won't have.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, again, sum all this up, like, what did I say was the kind of the mindset? Yeah, anything unstable, an unstable anything will undermine anything you do. And so go into this like with an open mind, ask for help, do the best you can, and don't go cheap on the gear, because this is your backbone of your deployment.
That's it. Couldn't agree with you more.
We'll wrap up there. Thanks, everybody, for listening this week. I want to say a special thanks to our Patreon subscribers that support us with a donation of various amounts at the end of every month. And so we certainly appreciate people contributing towards that. Big thanks to our sponsors as well. EasyGrade, EasyGradeApp.com, XMA, XMA.co.uk, and then Jamf Software at JampSoftware.com as well. So again, this is kind of part four of our deployment 2016 series. On Twitter, use the hashtag #deploy16 for questions, and we can and then we'll see those, and we can either answer them via Twitter, which we have a couple of them, or we'll talk, if they're kind of broad enough, we'll talk about them on the show as well. So next thing is device selection. And so we're largely going to talk about iPad here, mainly because that's kind of what our listeners are doing, and one of the discussion is about iPad in schools as well. We'll talk about some other things that we'll also talk about inside of the iPad line. What are your options there, from the mini up to the pro?
Looking forward to that one.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you don't follow me on Twitter, I'd love to connect. I'm Bradley Chambers on Twitter, and my blog is chambersdaily.com on the web.
And I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter and spears.org on the web.
Have a great week, everybody.